And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. We are not the saddest Toronto sports podcast any longer. That only lasted a couple weeks. The high-flying Toronto Maple Leafs and the maybe sneaky, very good Toronto Blue Jays carrying the day as the Toronto Raptors kind of bowed out in the last third of the season and then missed the playoffs for the first time in my career covering the team. But that position at the bottom of the Toronto, of the major Toronto sports pyramid, seeded very early as the Toronto Maple Leafs blow a 3-1 series lead in a fashion that quite literally you could not make this up, because they would tell you that it's silly and it doesn't make sense, and it's you're overdoing the bit at this point. So joining me is James Myrtle. Eric Green, what's up, man?
My happiness is worrisomely dependent on an Alek Manoah start tonight. So that's what's up.
At least there's no rain in the forecast.
Yeah. Is tonight the first game in Buffalo?
I believe so.
Let's go.
Sandlin Field, or however you say that name.
Sandlin Field, I think.
That makes more sense. I've been there. I should know this, but.
Yeah, I went to see, I've been there a few times as part of like my first real road trip with my best friend growing up. We went on a minor league baseball stadium road trip to Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, which was as glamorous as it sounds. And then I went with my brother before on a Saturday before a Sunday home Bills preseason game. We went to Buffalo to see Vladdy and Bo play.
At
Sandlin Field. It might have been Coca-Cola Field then.
Yes.
Anyway, it's probably a nice little stadium.
Yeah. From the Sportsnet features on it, it looks like the changes are quite positive. It looks a little more major leaguey.
I just want the Yankees to complain again.
I know. Look, I know that Rowdy Tellez got hurt doing this, but I love the bullpens on the sideline. It's so minor league baseball. Eric, I don't want to upset you too much, but Alek Manoah is not starting tonight.
Oh, shoot.
He starts tomorrow. Robbie Ray gets the home opener, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah, I'm not as invested now.
Yeah.
A bad Robbie Ray start will upset me, but a good Robbie Ray start has limited upside for me.
On the bright side, you now have something in common with Alek Manoah in that you're not doing a home opening as soon as you thought.
Oh no!
Got his ass.
The world is a dark, dark place, and I'm no longer. I think I'm no longer afraid to die. Just gonna mix a bunch of emo album titles and assume it makes sense, guys. It's rough out there. And before you say it, yes, I'm in a very privileged position. Yes, I'm aware of all of it. It doesn't make going through the process of trying to procure a home in Toronto any more fun. But these are literally, in the words of Chris Traeger, first world problems.
Literally.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to talk about some Toronto Raptors basketball. It's been 2 weeks since we last came to you, and our last one was kind of put a bow on the season, on a season that doesn't deserve a bow. It was right after the season-ending press conferences of Masai Ujiri and Kyle Lowry and Nick Nurse. There's been a couple weeks for things to settle in now and kind of marinate. We've had some content up over at theathletic.com, which, by the way, theathletic.com/we the six for a discounted subscription. If you are not already subscribed to the written side of the site, you missed the $1 a month window, but believe it's only $3.99 a month if you go to theathletic.com/we the six. Eric had a lot of good end of season wrap stuff, including a takeout on Masai's future, a takeout on Kyle Lowry's future, player grades, which are always fun to argue about and tell Eric he was too soft or too easy on guys. And you had that nice back and forth with Sam Vecenie to kind of kick off our draft coverage. We're going to do a written reasonablist about the draft later this week. For those of you looking for more draft content,
I have a piece also coming on Wednesday about
Scotland Barnes.
It's about Scotty Barnes, but it's more about sort of best player available versus fit and how, basically, to spoil the article, there's just less reason than ever to not go best player available, given that there are more ways to integrate different types of lineups, and you have Raptors 905 also as a playing opportunity.
How was the exercise with Sam, though? I enjoyed reading it. Usually that's mine do, but how was that leading you into what I hope was a nice, relaxing week off?
It was pretty good, the week off. Obvious complaints aside, which is literally everything. But it was good. Sam knows his stuff, quite obviously. And it was interesting to hear how some names I've heard of might fit. And it definitely, got me a bit more primed for, I still, way, way more to go to get up on the second round stuff. But in terms of the first round lay of the land, I definitely feel my feet on the ground a little bit.
Buddy, it's Deuce McBride season. Let's go. You want to talk second round picks?
I'm certainly, you can start to see where certain names might line up if the Raptors stay around 7 or 8 or if they move up and how those fits might work immediately versus long term. Sam knows his stuff and can't recommend if you ever got a chance to chat with him about the draft, I think he lives in Australia now, so you'll have to make the time work. But
he lives in Australia, yet I'm higher on Josh Giddey than him. Figure it out.
you and whoever was in Australia, Melbourne, I believe, scouting him for the Toronto Raptors. Yeah. Confirmed.
Over at the written side of the site, you've had stuff like that. I've done a few early draft and free agency things. Who's most likely to stay? Your free agency cap primer. Should the Raptors trade a pick? What's the early draft board look like? A little breakdown on Canada Basketball's camp invite list last week. And a piece that I'm really happy with how it turned out. A big feature not related to the offseason on Raptors 905 assistant coach Eric Khoury, who has one of the coolest paths to being an NBA coach imaginable. So if you haven't checked that out, please do. Today, though, we're going to just answer your questions. It's a mailbag day. I did do a two-part mailbag and a live Q&A immediately after the season ended over on the written side of the site and the Q&A part of the app. However, it's been 2 weeks. Some of you probably only listen to the pod and don't read the site or miss those articles. So we're going to dive into those questions anyway. Some of them might be repeat from stuff that's come up, but we'll just not ask those ones or we'll just breeze through them quickly. Eric, you are playing the role of the mailman, Chris Humphreys, today and firing the questions our way.
Yeah. So first one comes from Charlie Nichols. Which centers / big forwards in this draft could you see starting at the 5 over Khem Birch? This, of course, assumes Khem Birch is back. Reminder, he's an unrestricted free agent. I feel like it would be a Raptors move to start the vet and have the rookie earn his keep on the bench, but I also think you wouldn't bench, say, Evan Mobley.
Yeah, I mean, this is really one where, this is more of a draft philosophical than it is Khem Birch versus Evan Mobley. I will say that, depending on what you're looking for from that position, Mobley is probably the guy you could drop in, and try to figure it out and make it work. Kai Jones is just not that guy yet. I like him a lot, but he needs some more time. Sengun, the guy playing in Turkey, I don't know that he's going to be able to defend necessarily out of the gate, at least in the way the Raptors would want from their starter. And then you're getting into a lot of Isaiah Jackson, Isaiah Todd, guys that are fringy picks in general, depending on your tastes and depending on what your development plan is for them and stuff. And I certainly don't think you worry about whether they're starting or coming off the bench. So Mobley's the big one. And I think that that's one where, look, if he comes into camp and he looks great and he's fitting with Ananobi and Siakam, awesome. If he has to come off the bench and, you know, take kind of the Jakob Poeltl role or take the kind of slower progression up the depth chart that we've seen them do with other bigs, that's fine. But more my answer to this question is, with the exception of maybe Cade Cunningham, probably Cade Cunningham, you should really not be looking at, you know, day one impact to the high part of the rotation from a rookie. There are obviously good rookies. There are rookies who contribute. We saw even Malachi Flynn, who was the number 29 pick and didn't contribute a lot over the first couple months of the season, was a big contributor in March and April for the Raptors, or April and March and April. When did the season end?
May.
April and May. Yeah. Geez. You saw
March
that
is
like,
when they went 1-13 and nobody played well.
Right. but you can see that, you know, guys can come along and guys can contribute, especially, you know, a more experienced guy like a Flynn. You know, if you're coming from something like the Turkish League where you've put up big numbers, maybe you can step into a role. But for the most part, you know, you're kind of thinking, I think, hey, if this guy can run with one of the eighth or ninth rotation spot, awesome. If not, maybe he needs some 905 time as he bounces back and forth, especially if that team's back in Mississauga and the main team's back in Toronto next year. It's not like this negative thing to need time with the 905. The Raptors have two extremely well-played pieces of their core who spent a fair amount of time in the 905. So, yeah, all that's to say, don't necessarily evaluate guys by their day one impact.
I would just add that Kai Jones in particular seems like he might be a 905 guy to me, just because of how difficult that position can be to pick up defensively.
Yeah.
And the question was asked about centers, and he'd really need to figure that out. Also, it would not shock me if, like, this one of the second rounders, if this is the way they go, ends up like sort of like clutching on to the back end of a rotation spot, maybe while the first rounder is more in high development mode, just because a lot of those guys who might be with that for might be available or might be in consideration with that first round pick are more 18 or 19 year olds. And a lot of the guys who they might look at as second rounders are more likely to be 22 or 23 year olds. So that I'm not predicting that, like, it's way too early. Like even when we get to the date, it's going to be hard to predict what they're going to do in the second round for sure. But that is typically, like, just look at what's happened in this most recent draft. Like, you have guys picked in the second round who contributed right away. And so that wouldn't be that unusual to see. But over the long haul, hopefully, you know, unless you get like a diamond in the rough type thing, hopefully your first round pick is really performing at that level where, if not in the first year, you're getting that surplus value in years 2 and 3 and 4.
Yeah. You know, maybe the one interesting answer to this question, and again, this is, we're really reaching here, but, you know, maybe the Raptors lean into, hey, us having 3-6-9 forwards was the best approach for us defensively, and Garuba's gonna start, and he's listed at the center, but really him, OG, and Pascal are just switching everywhere, 3-4-5, and no one's ever going to score. And that includes the Raptors. You know, maybe that's the approach. What else we got in the mailbag, Eric?
Rev K, after the 30% salary qualify criteria, Matt, was it 30 or 28?
It was 28.
So, wow, Eric Corrine. Knowing the CBA. With an NBA team selection, all NBA team selection, do you think it is likely that Pascal Siakam will be a neutral value contract? If he doesn't, or if he isn't, are we stuck riding out his contract with little flexibility without being able to push into pseudo title contention?
Yeah. Look, I mean, at this point, I think trying to figure out the dollar per win, you know, it's something that I'm going to do, obviously, every offseason. But, you know, I hate the term sunk cost for something like this, because, like, obviously Siakam is still a very good and valuable player. So I don't mean he's a sunk cost as a player entirely. But if you're looking at, say, oh, I only think Siakam's going to be worth 23% of the cap moving forward, not 28%. That 5% band is a sunk cost. Like, you could think about it and you can discuss whether he's worth it, but there's nothing they could change about it. They can't. And this is part of why I remember people being very mad at me for being against the Siakam extension coming early. Not that I didn't think they would max him eventually, but guaranteeing that before RFA, when like the worst case scenario was you max him later with more information, you know, I do think that there was,
which I think would have happened, by
yeah,
the way.
And I just, I don't think there, I never got a good justification for beyond, you know, we want to show faith in our guy, for why they needed an escalator beyond the max to push him into supermax territory. It just seemed like an unnecessary concession on a deal that was always likely to get done. And that's real money. You know, when we do their, when we do the cap sheet breakdowns, which we've been doing a lot of and we'll do a lot more of, you know, the difference between 25% and 28%, especially in a cap year like this for the Raptors, is, you know, it's pretty big. It's a difference of about $3.5 million this year, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, we've talked about how the Raptors' theoretical max could get up to 24. Well, that could suddenly be 27.
Yeah, and especially when you're, if you're going after a restricted free agent, like that could make a ton of difference. You know, maybe not, but every dollar matters ultimately, which is how they have to think. And I'll push back, but we've seen that Pascal Siakam can be a really important player on a championship team. Now, at the time, he was on a rookie contract, so that, and in a lesser role. So I know it's not an apples to apples comparison, and you can't just say because Pascal Siakam was the second and a half or third best player on a championship team making the rookie scale, all of a sudden he can be the second or third best player on a championship team making 28% of the cap. It's not the same thing, but we know that that guy is in there. So I'm not sure it will be neutral value, but I think he's good enough and it's close enough that in the biggest of pictures, you don't really sweat it. Now, I'm not against the micro analysis that that he asked this question in, and you're answering it in, but I don't think that it's something the Raptors really worry about at this point.
Yeah, and like even from a fan perspective or a micro analysis perspective, this is likely to be the last offseason where like it really matters. Like this is the Raptors' cap offseason. This is their cap space offseason if they don't do Lowry. So next year, you know, they're assuming, making, you know, a couple assumptions about this offseason, and I think reasonable ones. Next year, they'll be operating as an above cap team. And then, yeah, that $3.5-4 million when you tack on the escalators is meaningful for luxury tax and things like that. But at that point, it's just money, not flexibility. So, yeah. You know, there's some scenarios where the apron or whatever, but we'll cross those bridges when we come to them.
Guided by Brody, who I assume is named after Guided by Voices, whose Game of Pricks and I Am a Scientist are two of my favorite, you know, maybe 100 to 150 songs ever, writes, what Raptors enjoy a little indie rock on the turntables from time to time? Somebody must know who the Pixies are. I'm not sure about that.
It's just Pixies.
Yeah, good point. Or if you're using a T, it has to be lowercase, as it isn't here. Not to put Guided by Brody on blast here. I will say, as I might have said at some other point, that the Walkmen, who are one of my favorite bands ever, played their last ever show before going on indefinite hiatus at Matt Bonner's charity event.
Nice.
I believe it was in New Orleans at the 2000 something All-Star Game. But as for current Raptors, you might know better than me, but I can't think of anyone off here.
Yeah, I don't have a good guess.
Who gets the most eclectic, even?
Probably Fred of the guys that I've talked to, but Fred's non-standard listening goes into a lot of like R&B and soul stuff. So I don't know that it would go. This is a weird one because we know he's a hip hop guy and a new hip hop guy, like Young Thug, Trippie Redd, that kind of stuff. I feel like if there's anyone that would vibe with Pixies, it's OG. And maybe that's because of the similarities between OG and Orange Cassidy, and Orange Cassidy now coming out to Where Is My Mind as his entrance theme. But yeah, I'm going with OG. There's also an element of like, I know he likes a lot of the current rap that has like some pop punk influence. So like, you know, he was a Juice WRLD fan and stuff like that. So maybe there's enough there. Maybe we could get there.
Now I'm going to love just picture OG listening to Crackety Jones, which is one of the more weird songs on by Pixies. Just weird to say without the, but that's how it is. Suzanne Parr, I see this team as a go for it now, brackets 2-year window team with Kyle Fred, Pascal OG, Chris Boucher, all at or near their peak. Assuming we keep Kyle, prayer hands emoji, and the others keep improving in real time, who do we need to add to make our team a contender? And do you think Kem is the long-term answer or the answer for center? Obviously, it becomes really difficult to add if you're keeping Kyle. Like, it's sort of Kyle versus cap space.
It's Kyle and trades and the mid-level, or it's cap space. So,
so I think they're a level below true championship contender as an upside with this group coming back and like even them doing as well as possible in trades, short of like a Kawhi level miracle, which, you know, it doesn't seem as of now to be on the table. And certainly there's nobody with the mid-level that's move it like that could make them a very competitive team. You know, you're a fourth seed, maybe is sort of a third seed, a really good regular season team as the peak. But as I think there's lots of reasons why you could bring Kyle Lowry back, but he certainly puts a cap on the hypothetical ceiling for now.
Yeah, and then if you're talking about who can they add, well, we're talking about either trades, which are really hard to predict, or the mid-level, which is not going to be a sexy name. Like even at the mid-level, you know, my guy Rashawn Holmes is out. So, you know, that's where you run into trouble. That's why the Kyle thing is a very interesting situation for them to be.
Are we on the Harry Giles bandwagon again this year, or are we off?
He was extremely bad this year, but he did rebound like hell. So, sure.
If you could get him for the minimum.
Could have gotten for the minimum last year.
No, exactly. But we're still into him if we can get him, if the Raptors can get him from the middle.
Yeah. Chris Dunn, too. Whatever. Just bring in all my guys.
run Blake's offseason plan back. Miles Moose, frequent question asker. Hey, Miles. Rank the avenues to a championship from most likely in brackets, likely, unlikely. Now my head hurts, to least likely path to a championship for this team in the next 4 years. And he lists drafts, free agency, trades, internal development, not possible. My quick answer to all of that is you need all of them. I think that's pretty clear. Like, unless you're a super duper team, and unless you're sort of the Lakers, who, and to a lesser extent Miami, who know they will always be free agency players, you need that internal development. You need to, you know, really hit on a draft, on a draft pick or two, and you need to, you know, kill it with one trade or two to put yourself in that range. Like, we saw that with the Raptors championship, and if it's like draft focused, I think it's almost most likely to not come in the next 4 years.
Right.
You would say that window would open up, you know, 5 to 7 years.
Short of getting Kane.
4 years. Yes. So I don't know. I think internal development is probably the most important.
Well, it's maybe, also the thing you can control the most.
Yes.
You can't control where you land in the draft lottery. You can't control.
Oh, can't you, Blake?
You can't really control, you know, what star is going to become available in trade and stuff like that. So control what you can control. And a lot of that's internal development. Now, I would say in free agency, you know, you don't want to overpay, but they don't really have the money to overpay anyone anyway. And, you know, mid-level is not going to sink you.
So a pair of Kyle Lowry questions here. First off, with Miami getting swept, where the team is from a roster perspective and the top heavy East, I don't see them as a threat to sign Kyle at all. What would be your ideal or realistic re-sign deal? And please be reasonable. No, I won't be reasonable.
Yeah.
I'll be unreasonable. I think you are maybe underestimating the Miami Heat. First off,
Heat culture.
Yes, never underestimate Heat culture. Although Jimmy Butler did not necessarily back up his words of being so locked in for the playoffs. I'm a Jimmy Butler fan, but you know they got rocked by the Milwaukee Bucks. I still would list them as the most likely team to sign Kyle Lowry outside of the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, look, their path to doing so is fairly straightforward. You walk away from Oladipo, Ariza, and Bielitsa, who are all, UFAs. You can remove their cap holds. You then have basically just, you know, Jimmy and Bam under big deals. And then you have Goran Dragic and Andre Iguodala, who are both in weird spots where, like, Iguodala has a trade kicker and Dragic is technically a one-year bird guy, so he can overrule a trade, but probably wouldn't if it means his $19.4 million non-guaranteed gets guaranteed.
Which seems nice.
Yeah, so they have those guys that they can use to make a sign-and-trade work if they operate as an above cap or don't get all the way to cap space, or they could just cut ties with those guys, use the flexibility, punt Kendrick Nunn to the moon, and then use Duncan Robinson's cap hold to then re-up him as an RFA. Yeah. Like it's, they'd be a little thin then. You're looking at Jimmy, Kyle, Bam, Hero, Precious, and Duncan Robinson. But, you know, the Heat really trust their ability to fill in at the margins inexpensively and attract vets. And, Udonis Haslam's going to take up one of those roster spots.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that it's all the way out. You know, you could convince me that with Jimmy Butler, it's actually more likely because he's now going to go into Pat Riley's office and demand Kyle. But anyway, I would just say that don't rule stuff like that out because things move really quickly.
Yeah. As for the Raptors keeping him, I don't know about you. We haven't really talked about this. If they're going to keep him, and I'm, again, not against it, I'd almost rather it be a 2-year deal at this point than a 1-year deal, just because they're going to lose a lot of their, if not all of their cap space, as OG Anunoby slides into his extension and presumably Gary Trent slides into his extension or restricted free agent deal if the Raptors do keep him. So I'd rather, you know, if like 2-36 from a Raptors perspective, I think would be great.
I threw out 240.
Yeah.
In our earlier
mailbag. I'm not sure that gets it done, but that would be great from a Raptors perspective.
I mean, look, I think the absolute floor is probably 230. Hey, we're giving you 50% more than the mid-level, which is probably what you'd have to get elsewhere at your age to join a contender. And like, everyone knows that Kyle Lowry is still good and maybe Miami, you know, pays him more than that. It's certainly a possibility. But also the list of guys who have got paid more than $20 million at this age is LeBron James.
Maybe
Dirk too. But either way, it's a small list. I thought Dirk was on his Mavs friendly.
When did Kobe sign his last extension? The 248.
Yeah, everybody. Maybe it was Kobe. Anyway, the list is very small. And it is absolute superstars. So, I would love a 230, but I'm comfortable at 240. And I'd probably, you know, at that point, you're not a cap space team anyway. So, you know, if it takes a little bit more and you can have it declining the next year or partial guarantee or something like that, go to town. Although the idea of Kyle Lowry having a non or partial guarantee has Kyle Lowry shenanigans written all over it. He'll sign that on August 6th. And then the first day of training camp, we'll get the Kyle's not speaking to media. Is he waiting to have his second year guaranteed? Like, so maybe let's avoid that.
Yeah. On the other hand, you can heavily incentivize something.
You can't that much, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Sandy Clipsham, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. What parts of Kyle Lowry's game do you think are least likely for Van Vliet to be able to replicate through his career? The one that jumps out to me before going to you is certainly the way he's able to leverage his body around the rim as a finisher. So that's the first one that jumps up to me. What else jumps out to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big one, right? Is Kyle Lowry is such a good pick and roll orchestrator, in part because despite his size, he's a threat to drive. And he's that skill's come and gone in terms of volume over the years as his roles shifted. But he's generally remained a pretty effective finisher when he does drive it. And you know, a lot of the times Van Vliet is either going to fall or have to gnash and come back around and reset. And I think that there's just a little bit of dynamism that isn't there with Van Vliet that's there with Lowry in terms of, you know, if you're a backpedaling center, oh no, what do I do? You know, there's an extra layer with Lowry that, you know, honestly, Van Vliet just has, as good as he's gotten, he just hasn't shown a lot of it still. And I know he doesn't like when articles are written about that necessarily, but it's the biggest weakness in his profile right now. I would have said last year, probably the pick and roll passing, but I think that that came along really well this year.
Nobody likes to be publicly criticized, as the Chicago White Sox and can attest with their manager, Tony La Russa. Does the NBA have a Tony La Russa?
If Tony La Russa was good, I'd say Thibodeau maybe, but
yeah. Anyway,
Thibodeau would definitely have Taj Gibson throw at someone.
A pair more, while we're talking about Kyle Lowry, Kevin Weitzman asked a 2-part question. I'll ask the second part first. The most logical Lowry sign and trade destination / trade packages, the Clippers basically can't do this for practical reasons, assuming Kawhi Leonard is back. And if he's not back, they probably wouldn't be in the market to trade for Kyle Lowry, which is they're like the obvious answer to me as a team that would look to acquire him. But they pretty much can't do it, right?
Yeah, it would be they'd be hard capped. And I don't know that they could add Lowry and stay below the hard cap in any like reasonable or functional way. My answer is still the 76ers on this one. I think they could revisit that, but I don't want to punt this question too far down the line, but the honest answer is most of the suitors for Kyle Lowry are still competing right now.
Yeah.
And
who flames out? Yeah. That's a huge question when considering all things offseason, except for the draft basically. And especially in the absence of like a true superstar on the free agent market, leaving aside Kawhi's status, like that's going to determine so much. And about where Lowry, who at this point, like he's a really good player and yes, could swing a title on the fringes, but isn't like somebody you're putting into your top two core. Probably. I mean, you can debate Miami's theoretical pecking order. the teams that flame out or have a disappointing end to the season are more likely to go aggressively after him and make a compelling offer because they have more motivation to do so. And before I get back to the first part of Kevin Weitzman's question, Kevin, by the way, let me know if you are the Kevin Weitzman who I played softball and hardball with in Thornhill, Ontario. That would be interesting. Jeff Fitzpatrick asks, how much do you think Kyle Lowry's talents allowed the Raptors to run out a small backcourt continuously and not get burned for it? And do you think they will need to get bigger in the backcourt in a post-Lowry world, especially if they are going to stay smallish at the five?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's no secret that Lowry and Van Vliet are why that works. It's not, you know, you can't run out small without good defenders. Like, everyone's got to be able to switch. Everyone's got to be able to defend up a position. I would say that they probably have faith that Malachi Flynn can grow into that kind of guy. But yeah, like, if you're 6 feet tall and you're not an elite defender, it's harder to keep you on the floor than like a 6'4 guy. And, you know, I would say that the Raptors being quote unquote small at point guard wasn't really their issue this year. It was that all their shooting guard options were inconsistent offensively or, you know, borderline abhorrent defensively. Like, Norm did not have a good defensive season. Terrence Davis was unplayable. Matt Thomas never had their faith defensively. You know, you can go down the list. And it's a big part of why they roll two point guards together so often and why, you know, Pascal and OG sometimes slide to the 4-5. It's because those guys are really good defensively, and it's, you know, it's not really about philosophically they like to play small. It's that philosophically they like to have their best players on the court as much as possible.
Absolutely. I'm not sure whether, like, Kyle Lowry or Fred Van... I mean, let me rephrase that. Kyle Lowry and Fred Van Vliet are both incredibly important to making that work. I would say that Kyle's particular ability to defend in the post, not that Fred can't do that, but Kyle is like a next level player in terms of doing that, is especially important in making that work. And it's just hard to find that that stoutness and that ass, can we say? He's a great post defender. And everybody who watches the Raptors knows this. Back to Kevin Weitzman, the first part of his question, and this is obviously one of the most popular questions just in general about the Raptors offseason. If Lowry leaves, who are your preferred free agent targets? If you want to ballpark contract them, you can. But let's remember, the Raptors can basically realistically create, as you said, $24 million, somewhere north of $20
million. And that's a lot. Like they got to do a lot to get there.
Yeah, so let's just assume it's
20. Let's say 20.
So who's at the top of your list?
Nobody.
Ooh,
they're all bad. I really like. I mean, it's no secret at this point. I like Rashawn Holmes. You know, I think as a center fit, that in that like above the mid level but not nearing max territory guy, I think he's really interesting. Sacramento kind of punted cap space in a weird way where he might actually be pluckable from there. Here's the thing. First of all, we're going to go through all of this in a lot of detail in articles in the coming weeks, so I don't want to kill it all here. It's not a very seamless podcast topic. I will say that the free agent landscape is a lot of older max-ish players, and then a lot of role players that you might have to overpay to pluck. Like, I don't have interest in... He's been good lately. I don't have interest in paying Tim Hardaway Jr. $15 million. I don't have interest in paying Dennis Schroeder $20 million to pluck him away.
Certainly not.
You know, like Kelly Oubre, sure, he'd fill a role, but, like, he's not... You know, it's not a ceiling-changing guy. I mean, maybe it's a little bit. It certainly doesn't hurt. He's a good player. But, like, you know, is that the move that you get excited about and it's your last swing with cap space? Probably not. So there's a lot of and then there's the fact that, like, a lot of really interesting guys have player options that, you know, in a lot of years, we'd be like, yeah, for sure, he's gonna opt out. But you have a Will Barton who hasn't really been healthy, a Spencer Dinwiddie who's coming back from injury, you know, some other like Serge Ibaka, who we thought wouldn't be picking that player option up, and now, like, you know, could go either way, because him and Montrezl Harrell, actually, like, they're probably not getting more money than that on the market, but they're also unhappy with the roles, it would seem. Not that Ibaka's made noise about that and stuff. Anyway, there's more, like Jermichael Green's another guy like that. You can... It's a weird one. It's
a weird class now that a lot of the the highest value players are out of it.
And I can't tell if that's going to result in a lot of discount guys out there, guys who maybe even get squeezed on the mid-level, or if it means there's going to be like a quick bonanza of a bunch of guys getting overpaid, and then it gets really quiet. I don't really know. So this is a terrible answer to your question.
Yeah.
But I will say that lots of stuff like this is coming in the coming, you know, we got 2 months here.
Yeah. I like Dinwiddie in general. His, you know, his health is obviously a huge question. I've mentioned Nerlens Noel, not as like a break the bank guy, but as an exciting, as like a good answer at center, but I'm skeptical he'll leave the Knicks. John Collins would be a dream, but he already turned down 4 and 90 from Atlanta. That's not to say he would do so again, but he's a restricted free agent, and it would just, I think, functionally be hard to extract him.
Yeah, I mean, situation. Maybe that's one where you get creative with some sort of RFA sign and trade, and yeah, that hard caps you, but like maybe you send some salary out, and there are ways to make stuff like that happen. It's not happening, but like similarly in the RFA bin, give me Lonzo Ball. I don't know why New Orleans wants to move away from him, but I love Lonzo Ball. So, any ball will do. If you want to get me LiAngelo for the 905, whatever.
Yeah. Can we get, LiAngelo Ball and, Thianis Antetokounmpo? We'll just get all the Frank Stallones, if you are not to, dismiss them too much, but, that'd be a fun angle. Canada basketball question here.
Let's go.
If all players were healthy, what is your ideal starting five for the Canadian men's basketball team? Let's start with the obvious one. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at one of the two guard spots.
Yep. And I would say Jamal Murray at the other one.
Yes. And so this is where it becomes... certainly more interesting. You could go small. You could stay smaller. Lou Dort could be your sort of verse 3-and-D guy who's a bit smaller. You could go RJ if you want. You could go Dylan Brooks, or two of those three guys. Even I think on pure talent, that's where you're probably going. But it becomes a fit match now too. So let's. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go Brooks as my third starter. You know, you'd hope. Look, there's a lot that Dylan Brooks does, and I mean
he does a lot.
Yes. I mean that in a nice way, and you need to be a little bit careful about his freedom and his role kind of way. But I also think Brooks is like I don't have a vote, but I would have given long consideration to him for one of the all defense spots this year. And I think that when you're playing against some of these teams like Spain and France and the United States, not that Shea's a bad defender. Jamal's, you know, not the best. He tries hard. But you want a guy you can turn to as your perimeter, you know, who's guarding the best perimeter option on the other team. And I don't think that they have that kind of natural big 3-4 kind of guy. So Brooks is that guy for me. And, you know, I know that puts RJ on the bench, which is maybe a little awkward, but like RJ's skill set might be best suited on a team that talented right now to run a second unit anyway, where he can be kind of a combo guard with a bit more shooting freedom. You know, him and Nikhil Alexander-Walker kind of sharing the backcourt duties or something like that. Wiggins is the big question for me, where do you start him at the four and you're a little smaller, but you're super switchy 1-4 and you have the most just pure talent on the court? Or do you go another way with, you know, one of your quote unquote smaller bigs, I guess,
like Powell or Ken Burch.
Yeah, or even Melvin Ejim, who's like, basically Melvin Ejim is positionless in the, not in the modern NBA sense, in the FIBA sense of, look, man, you're a vet and whatever positions show up, you're playing the other one. You're going to, you know, sometimes you're a center, sometimes you're a winger, sometimes you're a defenseman. It depends what guys show up for pickup today.
I think I would lean towards starting Wiggins, especially because he's shown to be so adept in that, like, once upon a time, I would have said, can he really play next to all these ball dominant guys? And now it's like, well, maybe actually that's his best utilization. So I think I would start him. As for the five, like, it becomes...
it's Olynyk for
like,
me.
Yeah, like, I that's where I was leaning. A healthy Dwight Powell makes you think, but he's
Olynyk's just there. Got... So my thing with Olynyk is, one, you know, all else equal, the guy's been there over and over. Yeah. But I think also when you look at the offense and, you know, no matter what starters you go really at the 1-3 or 1-4, like... Jamal's your guy who can really heat up, but there's not, you're a little light on playmaking if you don't start RJ and you know, like Brooks can get his own bucket, but he's not a big creator for other guys. And Jamal is getting there as a point guard. But I like what Olynyk's playmaking can add to a group like that, just in terms of making them a bit more dynamic and a bit more kind of getting the most out of everyone. So I go Olynyk.
I see no reason to nitpick here. I think that is a fine and good group.
I mean, maybe you go Tristan at the four because he's a little switchy, but like, I don't know.
I don't think so. He's not as switchy as he once was.
Yeah, but is that just the Celtics? Like, is he just really upset at the leprechaun?
I think it's that damn leprechaun. It's Lucky's fault.
Him and his shillelagh. All right, we got to wrap this up. I got a hard out in a few minutes, so give me one or two more quick ones.
Okay. Well, that will take 6 hours. let's go. What is your opinion of Chris Boucher not getting this is from Dia Binesh, a fair vote for most improved player? I believe he got 7 total points in the most improved player.
Yeah, he was tied for 6th, I think.
Something like that. I wouldn't say that's unfair. Lots of players improve in the NBA.
Yep, and he missed a bunch of games at the end of the season, which, when you're going for kind of primacy effect, and like, he would not be the first person to win most improved based only on his role expanding, but his per 36 numbers were, like, not as good as the last 2 years. And obviously that first year is a tiny sample and last year was really sheltered minutes, but like, you could argue that he was the same guy just in more minutes and the three drop more, which is a real thing, but I would say he was also probably worse defensively. So I feel like that's the right spot for him, like somewhere in that 5 to 10 range.
Okay.
I just want to finish. Like, some of the reason this happens sometimes with six man or most improved is that people only list 3 guys on their ballot. So it might look a certain way that Boucher finished 6th or 7th or whatever. That is not everyone saying he's the 6th most improved. That's just the way it works when you only have 3 guys on your ballot. Sometimes that's how it shakes out, where, you know, maybe he would have been 4th on everyone's ballot, but he wasn't 3rd on enough people. So
yeah, you can only pick how many spots are on the ballot. 2 more non-Raptors specific questions, more fun ones, or in the case of the last one, not fun at all. I've lost track of who asked this question. Assign some wrestling theme songs to the Toronto players on the Toronto Raptors. We won't do the whole list, but for Kyle Lowry, I would like the Game's theme song.
The what theme song?
Like the Triple H's theme song.
Oh.
Just I want It's Time to Play the Game.
That evil app. Yeah.
Just because he will obviously exploit every rule within the game to win the game and be the game.
Yeah. I'm going to go with, are we sticking with, like, we're applying existing wrestling theme songs to these guys?
No, do whatever you want.
Okay. Like, well, is sticking with that, because that's how I initially thought of it. Not like, I'm not like going to give someone Alexis on Fire as entrance music or something like that. I'm going to give Fred Van Vliet Crash Holly's old music. And instead of coming to the ring with the scale to prove that he's not a cruiserweight, Van Vliet comes out with a 6 foot measuring tape to prove that he's 6'1" and can qualify for, you know, inclusion in that division.
I thought you were going to give him Mick Foley's old
car music. Crash.
Yeah, with the car crash. There was probably better ones, like Rodney Hollis Jefferson. That would be good for that song. Anybody who's fallen down a lot. Last one, and we'll end it on a topical note, from Terry Hussey. What can the Leafs do to stop being the 2018 Raptors? Is Kawhi Leonard available in hockey form?
Connor McDavid. I don't know. Marner for Eichel?
We'll see. Could be talked about.
I will say I understand that because they're both Toronto sports teams and it all feels somewhat similar, like running into LeBron and getting eliminated 3 years in a row and that being a mental block, a stopping point, and losing at the same point a bunch of times. Like, I get that it feels similar, but it's worth remembering that the Raptors had a conference finals run mixed in there and overperformed a couple years and then started running into the same blockage after winning playoff series. So they were, you know, I think...
I will also say the Leafs have more high-end talent.
The Leafs were the favorite in all of these series, except for maybe the Boston one. I think the Raptors analogy would be more apt if they were running into the Bruins over and over again. I actually think stylistically, it was the Canadians who were fairly similar to the 2018 Raptors here, because they are not really that good. They don't, you know, score at a high percentage. Carey Price's hot playoff series aside, they did not stop other teams at a high percentage, but they just did so well managing possession. And that's a little weird to translate basketball to hockey. But those Raptors teams in the DeMar and Casey era were very good at not turning the ball over and very good at forcing turnovers from other teams and pretty good at rebounding. So it's like, hey, maybe we're not going to out-talent you, but we're going to play smart and we're going to just get way more shots than you.
As we said last night, sort of in a conversation between ourselves, sometimes the reasonable answer when things are going like this for the Leafs, it's everything has to be on the table. I mean, everything, that's the similarity, is like when you meet a dissatisfying end so many times in a row, you have to go beyond, well, the bounces will go our way, or we will learn and grow as a group. And I think they've certainly reached a point where they're going to have to consider a lot of things that they didn't consider previously.
And it's not obvious because, you know, the early years of this front office, it was a lot of, we've got to get some of the more, I guess, toxic old school thinking out of here, where, you know, toughness and truculence reign, and we've got to put a premium on talent. And then there was the coaching change. And then, you know, there was last year was kind of their like, okay, well, let's reflect on what our strategy's been to this point and let's address some of these things that, you know, maybe there's a blind spot analytically or just in our roster building approach. So we'll bring in Spezza, we'll bring in Thornton, we'll bring in Simmons, you know, the Campbell move to address the goaltending situation. I know the Leafs still underspent on goalies relative to some of the top teams, and that's kind of like an anti-analytic thing. But also, like 3 weeks ago, people were talking about how Carey Price has one of the worst contracts in hockey. So let's maybe not go too far with the goalie stuff. So I don't think this is like, I don't think they haven't thought of where their blind spots might be. I'm personally of the mind, as we discussed in the DMs last night, that NHL playoff hockey is maybe not as well suited to like high skill teams because there's less freedom of movement with the increased physicality and all that. And I don't mean that to say like the Leafs got jobbed by the referees, because this far into this core, you've got to have that figured out. And you've got to learn to play around that.
That's the concern, is that your highly skilled players haven't figured it out. It's not that they're not skilled enough. It's like they're the wrong skilled players.
Yeah, I mean, look, Matthews had 5 points in that series, but Marner was borderline invisible and had, you know, some yips of sorts carrying the puck. And, you know, there are reports out there, including from Ian Tulloch in a piece today at Maple Leaf Hot Stove, that, you know, there's been some resistance from Marner to play differently on the power play in a way that might optimize that Marner, Nylander, Matthews group. All of this is to say, save us, Vlad.
Blake, you got to go. I know we didn't get to a bunch of questions. We always appreciate everybody's questions and everybody's support. TheAthletic.com/we6, the number 6, where you'll continue to get draft content. We'll move into a bunch of free agency content. So those who didn't get the questions answered, we'll come back to your questions at different points with this podcast, but we'll also answer them in probably more coherent form while we're writing, because it's easier to write than to speak, I think, Blake.
I agree. And it's more enjoyable.
I do hate speaking.
All right, I got to bounce. Thanks so much, everyone, and we'll talk to you sometime soon.
Thanks, guys. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.